Hey, it's Luke Burbank from the TBTL podcast, which is a show that me and my buddy Andrew Walsh do 5 days a week. We start each episode with a plan to talk about the news, but then we usually get sidetracked talking about our lives or what's making us anxious or telling fascinating stories like the time I gave Tig Notaro a ride to her hotel. Yeah, that happened. And it could be like an hour of our show. You can find us at tbtl.net or, say it with me, wherever you get your podcasts.
Let me see. Open Bluetooth preferences. There is no technology that is both as good and as disappointing as Bluetooth. Okay, I'm going to lose that. Yeah, forget that device. Now let's try this bad boy again.
I have a hard out in 5 minutes, Stephen.
I'll talk, and then later you can insert questions to justify my pearls of wisdom.
This is Don't Ask Tig. I'm Tig Notaro, asking you to stop ignoring the title of this podcast.
We are not alone.
Stephen Colbert is here for a very special holiday episode of Don't Ask Tig. Stephen,
Tig.
Hi.
Hello. Hi.
I forgot to say hi to you.
That's all right.
And I just want to tell you that when I was getting ready for this podcast, and I mean get ready, I took a shower and changed my clothes, and I did that for you.
Oh, good.
And I know I look absolutely no different than I normally do, but I want you to know that I know with every fiber of my being that at your house, there was a vibe of, oh, shoot, I forgot I told Tig I'd do her podcast tonight. Whereas at my house, I was like, oh my gosh, I have Stephen Colbert on my podcast tonight.
I am very excited. I am so happy to be on your podcast. I really am. It's always lovely to talk to you. It does not change the fact that I came home and said to my wife, Evie, I just need to grab a quick drink and a handful of nuts because I'm doing the Tig's podcast. She went, oh, is that tonight? I said, I told you this morning. I told you this morning when I came home, I have to immediately disappear as soon as I walk in because I'm going to go to my office and do the thing. And she goes, okay, see you in an hour.
See, I told you. I knew that the split screen of our houses were very, I knew it was very different what was going on.
But I'm all in. I just want you to know.
Okay. Well, I appreciate that. And I'm thrilled to have you. And, you know, I have to say there's certain people that, that I absolutely fall in love with comedically. And I mean, deeply in love. And you are one. And I knew I loved you from afar watching your shows, but to interact with you in person, the first time that I did, it was utterly electrifying for me. And, I feel like I was giddy. But
I want to say that you, madame, hide your giddiness well.
Well, you couldn't tell that I loved interacting with you. I mean,
I loved it too. For the people out there who don't know, can I briefly tell them what happened?
Yeah, sure.
Is that I forgot what I had done. I'd interviewed someone in DC for the day. I'd gone down there to do one of my interviews, and I got on the train that night. It was the last out of DC back to New York. And the entire car that I was seated in was empty.
Yes.
Except one seat had one person sitting in it. And I looked at my ticket and I went, they literally have me like seated next to this person. I walk up and I look to see who it is and I went, hi, Tig.
And no, I said, Mr. Colbert, you didn't see me. I was watching you settle in and I was thinking the same thing of like, are you kidding me? This entire empty train and this guy is going to like a nerd go sit in his designated seat. And I look over and I'm like, Mr. Colbert. And then you sat down.
Well, I was happy to see you.
I was happy to see you. But that wasn't the first time I interacted with you. I mean, like on your talk show.
Oh, we talked before. Yeah, no, I really enjoyed it. But I will say this: you have to admit that train ride was 3.5 hours of pretty darn good conversation, at the end of which I couldn't believe we'd already gotten to New York.
No, absolutely. And I feel like you were showing me, and I think it might have been your son's, a video of his very first open mic, or was it not his very first open mic?
I think it was just an open mic. I don't know if it was his first, but
I probably tried to make it more special.
Oh, but he was playing guitar and singing Fleet Foxes or something like that.
And I'm a bit of a germaphobe, and it really cemented how fond of you I was, because you pulled your earbud out and shared it with me, your filthy earbud. And I, without hesitation, put it into my ear, and you sat with one in your ear and there was one in mine, and we watched your son at his open mic.
What I want you to know is that the earbud I gave you was not filthy. Because I'm deaf in my right ear, and I never wear an earbud in my right ear.
All right, you caught me, but it still really pushed my comfort level, because I couldn't see that earbud start to finish in its day, you know. So,
the ear, if I ever wear it, only in my ear. I promise you that.
Okay, that's good to know. That's good to know. Well, I just, all of that I just told you, I just wanted to tell you that essentially you make me want to catcall your brain. I just love you.
Well, I want you to know my brain is willing to shake them up and put them on the glass.
Hey, shake it, don't break it. You know what I'm saying?
That's right. Mm-hmm.
When I say that to people and they really shake it, my favorite bit is to immediately say, careful, careful. You're going to break it. I've written better stuff, but it's fun for me.
But it's the delivery.
It's not even that. I don't even think the delivery is good. I don't think the writing is good, but I won't abandon the bit. Stephen, are you more of a Christmas fellow or a Thanksgiving fellow?
Well, they're so different. If you actually, if you're willing to open your heart and drink it in, totally different. Mm-hmm. There's less pressure on Thanksgiving, and it's got that going for it, mm-hmm. because the pressure is get the food on the table hot. That's basically it. And make sure that you don't run out of wine or something like that. And I was a waiter for many years, and I'm ready for the pressures of Thanksgiving, and I love it. And we normally have a huge Thanksgiving here. We have about 30 people. We sweep up, stragglers, people who don't have family around, or they're in from out of town or something like that. Friends of friends, everybody's invited. We have we do a very Kennedy Hyannis Port kind of football game in the backyard and a mud bowl, a very, very soupy yard in November. And it's fantastic. And people, including myself, who are way too old to be playing even touch football, are out there pulling a hand.
Everyone really gets in.
Oh, everybody gets into it. And we have a big fire pit going, and we have, crocks of hot cocoa and chocolate and everything. And that's how the day starts.
And what if somebody was to say, I got a little bit of a rickety body. Would you let them sit out, or would you throw them in?
Of course. Oh, no, there's no shame. There's no shame.
Okay.
But everybody, everybody throws down at a certain point. Everybody gets out there, gets a little muddy. So I love Thanksgiving. But Christmas, I'm a sucker for... Well, first of all, I'm a sucker for the Jesus because I'm a Christian, but
sure.
I love the traditions. I love putting up the tree. I love taking out the old ornaments, some mm-hmm. from my childhood and we've got three kids and the ones that they made. And I just can't believe I've measured out my life in tinsel strands. I can't believe how quickly the year flies by every time I take out that damn box of lights and try to figure out whether they're still all working, because before I put them away, I wrap them, I plug them in, I go, that's working, and it goes in the box. And then when I take them out the next year, I put them on the tree, and they go, one of you isn't working, and I talked to all of you a year ago, and you've not been touched since then, and something gives out. But I love that tradition.
Of yelling at lights? You like that tradition?
Well, it's all part of the process. I like the tree. I love fire hazards.
Uh-huh.
I love a huge crackling piece of kindling in the corner of the room. I love fires. I love nog.
Oh, I love nog.
Do you?
I do. It's one of the things, as a plant-based person, that I miss the consistency of nog.
There's like almond nog.
There is, and it's disgusting. But what my favorite is silk nog. I tried flaxseed nog yesterday.
That's a nightmare.
I am not a picky eater, sir. It is the grossest thing I've ever put into my mouth. But I do love nog.
Mm. And I like the Grinch Who Stole Christmas.
I do too. My kids are still scared of it a bit.
Oh, it's scary.
It is. It's scary even as an adult. But my son Finn, last year when he was three, he came down every morning during Christmas season and hugged the Christmas tree.
Oh.
Whew, there's nothing cuter. Every morning he comes down and wraps his little arms around the tree and then gets his day started.
How old is he now?
He's four now. Oh. That was just last year.
Is he your
year.
Eldest?
Well, they're twins.
Oh, okay.
And he is the eldest, so good guess.
Do you know the A.A. Milne poem, Now We Are Six? Do you know that one?
No.
You know, the Winnie the Pooh guy? I just love it. And it's so true, as you know, having had children, my children are all adults now, but like having children all through that. It goes, when I was one, I had just begun. When I was two, I was nearly new. When I was three, I was hardly me. When I was four, I was not much more. When I was five, I was barely alive. But now we are six, and as clever as clever, I think we'll stay six now forever and ever. Wait till your boy is six.
Wait. I cannot wait to get that, because you know what? There's a new theme around our house, and both Max and Finn always tell us that they don't want to get to be grown-ups. They want to be kids forever.
They're smart.
And yeah, they are smart. But I'll have to get that and get it framed for their room.
And it's true. My mother, who raised 11 children, my mother said, oh, it's so true. They get to age six and, you know, they're obviously at that point they're toilet trained, but they can like fend for themselves and get themselves a little something to eat, and they can understand the world, and they're wonderful company, and they want to talk to you. And at that point, the system goes, we'll take them now.
Yeah.
Now that you've made them perfect, we'll take them and we'll put them into school. We wouldn't have taken them before when they were hard, but now that they're easy, we'll take them.
Right.
And she always found that really not fair, that yeah. You make the child perfect and the system goes, we'll take them mostly away now.
Yes. Okay.
Have we started the podcast at this point?
We have not. No, we have. We have.
My cocktail's getting low. And
this is the intro chit chat. And then now we're getting into it. Now we're going to go save some lives.
Okay.
Stephen, people have holiday questions. They have problems. We're going to try and help them. Are you ready?
They have holiday opportunities. Let's take advantage of them.
They do. They have holiday opportunities. They really do. Don't we all? All right. The first question, we received this message from Rochelle.
Hey, Tig, I don't know what to do about the holidays. Our family is great, but they're a little angry and bitter, and COVID has just made them a little bit unbearable. We usually host Thanksgiving in our house, and they're not the funnest people to be around right now. I don't know what to do. Do we change our plans? Do we still host Thanksgiving? I have no idea. Help.
Okay. I have an answer. Do you have an answer?
My first answer is that I feel really unqualified to answer this, because that seems like a serious question.
Okay. I'm completely unqualified. And that's why the show is called Don't Ask Tig.
I feel better. I feel better now.
Okay. I'm going to say this is a perfect opportunity to use the best excuse, which is the safest excuse. And that's that because of COVID, you're going to spend this year apart. And I think that whether it's this year or any other year, I feel like it's important to allow yourself times and holidays and celebrations where you really can celebrate. And you don't always have to bring in your family or your friends. And I really just feel like it's such an easy ticket out with COVID this year. And you shouldn't have them over for COVID, for Thanksgiving.
Ding, ding, ding. Right on all counts. I associate myself with the comments from the gentle lady from Mississippi. my first instinct there is just don't call it off and just say, let's zoom in for the dessert course or something like that.
Ooh, that's good.
You know what I mean? Like, we zoom in for cocktails at the beginning or whatever you do beforehand, like the cooking and what are you having? And, oh, that pie looks fantastic. And you have the best gravy. And I wish I could be.
I can almost smell it.
Exactly.
How about that? Say that kind of thing, Stephen. I can almost smell
something
it.
Something smells good. And it might be my upper lip. I don't know. But just looking at you.
That's what my mother used to say.
What?
Whenever I said, oh, my gosh, something smells, she'd say, Tig, it's your upper lip. She always said that.
I thought I wrote that.
No, I thought my mother wrote that. I'd never heard that in my life, except my entire upbringing.
I say it all the time, yeah. Something smells good.
Is it a Southern thing?
Might be my upper lip. I don't know. And I'm sure I stole it from some wise old...
From my mother.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's great. And then check back in for the dessert course. And in the meantime, you all can be separate and just be super catty about each other. Like the pilgrims undoubtedly were about everybody they left back in England. You know what I mean? Can you imagine how the claws came out for the pilgrims talking about the people back in England who wouldn't let them have their crazy Puritan religion because evidently it was pretty crazy.
And how catty the people in England were about the pilgrims. They were just like, oh.
The Native Americans right there at the table must have been dishing hard in their native Algonquin. Basically, whatever the Algonquin is, she has a buckle on her hat.
And her shoe.
Oh, what? Did she put her shoe on her head? I told them to plant fish with their corn and they believed me.
You're a silly man. I've always felt that it was odd that people in England are so harsh and hard on Americans because I'm like, where are you?
Right. Well, kind of. I mean, I'm not. I'm Irish, but I get the idea.
But, you know, the Europeans, everyone like being hard on Americans. I'm like, where are you?
We're your fault.
You're us. Where are you? We just left.
The year I went for London for Thanksgiving, we went out on a little boat ride on the Thames with some friends. My wife went to Cambridge when she was in college, and she has dear friends over in London. And so we went out to dinner with them one night. We actually went to Thanksgiving dinner with them. But on Thanksgiving Day, we took a boat ride on the Thames, like a little, you know, speedboat ride on the Thames. And we went by a dock. And the guide said, I'm so glad you're here. You're the only ones who ever care about this. He goes, that's the dock that the Mayflower left from before it went and picked up the pilgrims, because it didn't pick up the pilgrims in London. It picked them up someplace else. But it left from that dock right there. And we're like, ooh. And our British friends are like, what was the Mayflower again? And what did it do? They had no idea. And their kids are exactly the same age as our children. So when we sat down for Thanksgiving dinner at one of these places in London that specializes in making Thanksgiving dinner for expats, like Americans over there, and they do it just the way you should. You sit at a restaurant, but they bring you everything on one big plate, just kind of mashed together. And when they sat down, the kid said, what's a pilgrim? Like we watched our kids explain Thanksgiving to their kids. This was 10 years ago. What's a pilgrim? Is every dish going to be pumpkin? You know, it was fantastic. Yeah.
That's really fantastic. But also what's more interesting is I didn't know you did accents.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Can I hear another one?
I'm Bobby De Niro. See, meh, I own this town. See, meh, bah, bang, bang, bang.
Wow, that's impressive.
Bang, bang. I used to actually do accents, but I never act anymore. So I don't know if I can still do any.
Do you want to act?
It's weird. I don't know. I mean, I did it for my entire career until 5 years ago. I was acting. And now I try really hard not to. It's really hard to not act if that's all you've done. And I try not to. And I kind of enjoy the ability to f up. Because I'm totally forgivable if I can't do it right. But not for the person who's at, like, you have to get it right if you're the actor.
That's not true. You should see me behind the scenes on Star Trek. They feed me my lines.
Brando too. That would feed Brando his lines.
Yeah, that's me.
You have been called the Brando of Star Trek.
I really have.
The Brando of the Federation.
If not, then it's a new day. After this airs, that's what I'll be known as. Anyway, I feel like you and I gave really incredible advice.
All I did was agree with you.
Yeah, but I think Rochelle is all hooked up for the holidays.
What do you think of the name Rochelle? What do you think of the name Rochelle?
Well, it's Rochelle, I think. R-I-C-H-E-L-L-E. Oh,
we're going to let it pass.
Rochelle. It seems like they just replaced an M with an R.
Yes. Rochelle sounds like it's like an Italian name for a tiny little rice dish.
Rochelle.
I didn't know you did accents.
Yeah, well, I act, and it's hard to not act all the time, except when I'm on Star Trek. That's when I take a break.
Questo è
mamma mia.
Una Richelle è un molto delizioso aperitivo.
A Notaro. My father's name was Pasquale Notaro.
Pasquale Notaro.
Pasquale. That's all right. All right, Rochelle. Have a happy Thanksgiving. Yep. Whatever happens, I hope.
Buon Natale.
Buon Natale. Rochelle, more holiday help after the break. And mwah.
I'm Tanya Mosley. In 1987, my sister Anita vanished without a trace. Decades later, thanks to DNA, we found her. But that's only the beginning of the story. She Has a Name is a new audio documentary that explores the search for redemption, confronting trauma, and healing in the face of unimaginable loss. Subscribe now to Truth Be Told Presents She Has a Name, where every revelation brings us closer to the truth.
I just feel like we are surrounded in this world by bullshit.
So how can you know what's real and what's not? Science versus. That's how. We answer questions like, does anti-aging skincare actually work? And what is your true personality type? And to answer these questions, we don't use opinions. We dive into the scientific studies, talk to the experts, and put it in a podcast that I know you are gonna love. Listen to Science versus on Spotify.
Steven, you have a choice for this segment. Do you want to tell a Christmas ghost story or play a game called I Don't Gift a Shit?
I'll do the second one. I don't have any ghost stories.
Well, you know, in England, that's a tradition over there is to tell Christmas ghost stories. In fact, we used to do it at our house.
I didn't
know that. Yeah, now you know.
All right, next stop, I Don't Gift a Shit.
I Don't Gift a
Shit.
Here's how it works. A lot of people out there have no idea what to get their friends and family this year.
Mm-hmm.
They've come to me and you for help. They don't know it's you, but when they find out it's you, they're going to be pretty happy.
Okay, we'll see.
They've sent us the name, the age, and one interest for the person.
Ooh.
And we have to decide on a gift.
Is there a time limit?
Well, it's rapid fire.
Lightning round.
So whatever comes to your mind.
First thing.
Yeah. Okay, Randall is 75 and will only eat his morning cereal out of one particular bowl. What do we get, Randall?
A gift certificate to one of those paint-your-own pottery places, and he can make his own fucking bowl.
That's a great answer. Alex is 26, and he's my husband and a music teacher. His primary instrument is the tuba. The heck do we get this guy?
A euphonium, which is like a tuba, but it's smaller and not as loud, but the same. It has the same fingering, if you'll pardon the expression.
Sure.
And so he can get all the joy of a tuba, but in fun size.
All right. Stella's age 4, and she wants to marry the color pink.
Age 4, and she wants to marry the color pink. Have you thought about giving a small child a cotton candy machine?
That they have full access to and could just whip up cotton candy at any hour of the day.
I got one when I was 6. I was given a cotton candy machine. A small one. And
everything's tiny. Tiny tubas, tiny.
Well, a child. I will say this. It is too young to give a child something that basically heats up sugar just short of incandescently hot and then spins it at like just suborbital speed. And then it purposely sprays the super hot sugar out in every direction. And you take a paper cone and go in the opposite direction to collect it. But have you thought of doing that? I did it. I only burned myself a little bit. I would give her a cotton candy machine.
The last one is AJ is 65 and he's constantly getting hurt doing activities he's too old for. What do we get this guy? You know, the first thing that comes to my mind is get him one of those three-wheel bikes that have the big wheels and the basket on the back.
I'd say a fan boat, one of those swamp fan boats, because they're not high impact.
They ride
over the water, and you can't deny that they look incredibly fun.
And you could also use the fan to wind up some cotton candy at the end of the day.
You can also go chase gators. No, come on. You had to have at one point wanted to ride in one of those fan boats.
I've ridden in those fan boats. And I used to water ski in the swamps of Louisiana as a kid. Who do you think you're dealing
behind
with?
Behind a fan boat?
Well, not behind a fan boat, but I've ridden in a fan boat. And I've also, and I'm saying, and in addition to that, I've water skied in the swamps of Louisiana.
So you water skied in gator country?
Yes, sir. I water skied in an area where there was a yield sign that said, caution. Gators. The last time my brother was in town or when I was out visiting him, I said, have I made this up? People are astounded when I tell him. And he said, no, yeah, we used to water ski in the swamps.
Are you an extra in a Burt Reynolds movie?
I would be. I'm fine. Well, you know,
me too, man.
I'm happy to do that kind of work. I'm not above anything.
I kneeboarded. I didn't ski, but I kneeboarded past gators on the bank when I was a kid. Like, you know,
I feel like you're trying to compete with me.
No, but we didn't know they'd be there. You have to know if there's a sign. We didn't know. We were just up the Wando. You know the Wando.
I didn't even need a sign. I don't need a sign saying caution gators. I was in a swamp. You know there's gators in there, but
I don't want a canoe in a swamp.
Right.
Because I know there are gators there.
I don't want to go back and visit now that I've had some time and distance. But I really was at an age where it's that invincible thing where I just assumed nothing would happen.
But just quickly before we move on, the fan boat thing. Are they fun?
A blast. Are you kidding me? A blast. You and me, we're going to do that in London sometime.
Up the Thames.
Yeah.
That's where the Mayflower left, y'all.
All right. Remember, it's the thought that counts. And I'm referring back to the gifts that we helped everybody. Stephen, our final listener question deals with someone who loves Christmas a little too much. Regan writes, soon I will succumb to what I've begun to refer to as the Christmas crazies. And just because you can't see this, I want to let you know, Christmas and crazies are spelled with K's. That's how nutso. Okay. Yeah. Each year it gets a little worse. Last year I made a gift list in October with mostly handmade gifts. I spent a lot of time and money trying to recreate the lovely spirit I felt as a child. On the outset, I still felt a little empty and pretty exhausted. This year I want a different approach. How do I share love and warmth and special seasonal spirit without spreading myself so thin?
Maybe instead of like trying to recreate like handmade gifts or everything, why don't you write a letter to the people that you're giving, you would be killing yourself to make these presents for. Why don't you write a letter talking about what they mean to you and why they're on your mind at Christmas time.
That's really nice.
And they don't have to be long. And maybe if you want to like add anything to that, maybe attach it to like a little treat that you make, like perhaps candy some orange rinds. I find that's a very Dickensian and old fashioned form of Christmas present, little bag of candied orange rinds or a donation to a charity of their or your choice.
Mm, yes. Yes, indeed. And maybe if you do write the letter, sign the letter saying, watch out for gators this Christmas, right? Mm-hmm. Something that really ties in the holiday spirit.
Sure. Or throw in like, I'm writing this letter because otherwise I will go Christmas crazy. And this is a cry for help, but cry with a K.
Or cry for kelp. And then you'll really seem Christmas crazy.
You only send it to harp seals.
Only send it to yourself. And then it's really Christmas crazy. Send all of the letters to your home address, to other people or you know what I'm saying. And do you suggest that Regan make the orange rinds herself?
Oh yeah, it's so easy.
Okay, but this is what she's trying to get out of.
Are you saying that Regan doesn't want to make anything for anyone else?
She's sick of this.
She doesn't say she's sick of it. She says she's...
I can read between the lines. She's sick of this Christmas crazy.
Regan, I think I understand you better than Tig does. You're looking for one thing you can do that is simple and lets everybody know how you feel. And it is that feeling of sharing yourself with other people that is the true spirit of Christmas. For did not Jesus himself say, it's the thought that counts?
This is the most religious episode.
Why? Because I've said the word Jesus.
You said Jesus.
Twice. I said the word
well,
Jesus.
Well, and you said it three times. Another one where you said Jesus like that. So there's three times.
But I earned it with the two sincere ones.
You sure did. Maybe we'll make this a very religious episode. A Christian episode.
No, or don't. I'm not here to proselytize. As I've said before, more Jesus for me.
You've been hogging all the Jesus.
Hey, nobody else wants the Jesus. More Jesus for me. I'll take them all, baby. That's fine.
All right, baby doll.
I got all the Jesus for me. Come on here, JC.
Regan, share that Jesus with Mr. Colbert. I wonder if Regan's got Jesus. Well, keep it together this year, Regan. Thanks for writing in. I'm very curious how your Christmas crazies go. Please keep in touch and let us know. And Stephen, before we go, and we are about to go, I had a delightful time with
you. This was like a glass of refreshing water. Thank you.
If not eggnog.
Oh, nothing is more refreshing. Oh, after a long run, nothing's more refreshing.
A cup of nog.
Oh, and a corn dog. Oh, just
eggnog and a corn dog.
Places the electrolytes. Yeah.
Oh, is that what it is?
The electrolytes that you're missing.
Well, Stephen.
Tig.
As fun as this was, I do want to acknowledge that for a lot of people, the holidays are not a fun time. And a lot of us may be alone. A lot of us may be grieving family and friends that we lost this year. Do you have any advice for people who may be going through a difficult time right now?
Well, no, you're not alone. Even if you don't know anyone else who's going through what you're going through, is that it's perfectly natural and so many people go through it at the same time. And also know that it'll pass, just like the holidays will. That those emotions are normal and not permanent. And it's perfectly valid to feel them. I mean, all I hear when I hear that is I want to talk to that person.
Yeah.
And I want them to know that they're loved and that they're valuable and that life itself is so beautiful that I want them to be hopeful that they will see the beauty of life, the radiant beauty of existence, like everything in the world is lit from the backside, like stained glass itself, like it's out there and waiting for you, and live in the hope of that. Not everybody needs that drastic of a conversion, but I did when I was younger. I suffered some tragedy when I was younger, and I had terrible sadness at the holidays. I couldn't bear how sad it made me. And at a certain point, I saw my sadness as momentary and had a flash for just a moment that the world was lit on the other side by something more beautiful than I could anticipate. And I let go of what I thought was kind of a hubris I had, that I knew what tomorrow would bring, and instead gave up to the idea that I didn't know, and made myself open to the possibility that I would feel better. And I know that's a very facile way of putting it, and mental illness and sadness is a very real thing, but I can only look to my own experience and know that however crushingly depressed I was for years, is that there is something on the other side of it, and don't lose hope.
That's really beautiful and incredible, and I'm certain that it's going to mean a lot to hear from you. And I, you know, I feel the same way, and I always go back to whether it's loss I've experienced or any sort of health challenges I've had over the past 8 years. I always try to stay in this place of trusting life. And it's kind of a weird thing to say, because you have no idea where anything's going to go. But I have really tried in the hardest and darkest moments to trust, like you're saying, that there is something more, there is something better.
And I don't want to, because this is your podcast, and I don't want to make this a religious podcast, but as a Christian, I would only add to that is that think about getting a cotton candy machine.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're really fun. And who doesn't love cotton candy?
Jesus.
What are you talking about? Okay. You think Jesus wouldn't have liked cotton candy? What are you talking about?
Can you picture Jesus holding cotton candy?
100%. 100%.
Okay, if there's an artist out there, could you please whip up a painting of Jesus eating cotton candy?
It should be loaves, fishes, and just a ass load of cotton candy. He could feed the multitudes.
I was going to say the final dinner, but that's not what it's called,
I like
right?
Final dinner. I think it was called the ultimate snack.
My sons are obsessed with the idea of midnight snacks, but whenever we go visit Nana in Palm Springs, they cannot wait to get up in the middle of the night and have a midnight feast, not a midnight snack, a midnight feast with Nana. And what they don't know is it's only 8 o'clock at night, but they think it is the middle of the night. And she pulls out whatever they want, and they just chow down and have their midnight feast with Nana.
And if you get nothing else, if you take nothing else from this podcast tonight, listeners, Tay's advice is lie to your children.
Anyway, there you have it. Stephen, thank you endlessly for taking the time to do this.
This is really, really lovely, Tay. Thanks so much. It was nice in a way that actually left me with more energy at the end. So thanks so much.
Well, good. Thank you.
Have a happy holiday, everybody.
Don't Ask Tig is hosted by me, Tig Notaro. It's produced by Thomas Ouellette, Mary Knopf, and Tracy Mumford. Our editor is Phyllis Fletcher, executive producer Lauren D, engineering and sound mixing by Eric Romani, digital production by Christina Lopez, talent booking by Marianne Ways, production assistance by Nancy Hsu. Our theme music is Friend in Tig by Edie Brickell and Kyle Crusham, and Listen to Your Heart by Edie Brickell. Special thanks to Hunter Seidman, Lily Kim, and Alex Schaffert. Our executive consultant is Dean Capello and Gobsmack Studios. You can always ask for advice at don'asktig.org. Just write in with your problem or send us a voice memo You can also follow us on social media at Don't Ask Tig. Don't Ask Tig is a production of American Public Media. And as always, thanks, Dana. And I'll tell Becky. That's what you're
all over the country.
We need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.